Steph and Good Day program. This week, much of what we are doing focuses on a renewed, I guess, reinvigorated future, the America that we've known over the past 10 years since September 11th, 2001. Has been certainly different. Most of us who've been around for a while have we have a specific feeling about that day. If you're a New Yorker, what happened in the weeks and months, and to a point, I guess, a limited sort of civility existed for a year or so afterwards. And I have been adamant in saying to my staff, this is not the past that we are going to focus on. This is what happens from today forward. Thus, what we are calling our focus stronger than ever 10 years past September 11th. And here to help us even further move ahead in the rebuilding process is Dr. Michael Berry, who is the Director of Pastoral Care at the Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Philadelphia. He's conducted a lot of research that is pretty revealing on how holding on to negative thoughts, Richie, negative feelings, and this can be applied in any number of ways, yeah, as we'll explore here with Dr. Berry, bitterness, unforgiving thinking, you hate this person, the anger that we feel, how does it affect our health? And how can we learn from the experiences in the past 10 years? Because a lot of people have held a lot of, I should put in the present tense, Dr. Berry, a lot of people hold tremendous animosity at large groups of people that are thought to be behind the problems that America has. So we're happy to have you here to talk about how this, by the way, it follows sort of on the heels of a lot of research that's been done into the power of prayer, the power of thought, collective thinking and collective wisdom. I believe, frankly, personally, that there is much good that comes of the collective group thought. There is proof that when you, if you want to call it praying, whatever, when you think the same thing, a whole group of people, a lot of good happens. So let's explore that we've acknowledged, I think, that negative thinking does create things like cancers. The stress and stuff, you can work, you can honestly believe and see the specifics that lead you to believe and understand that cancer is a result in part of stress brought about by these feelings, right?
Sure. In fact, it's very hard to have a meaningful conversation about forgiveness without being very clear in terms of what we mean by the terms, because they mean different things to different people. All religions value forgiveness, but they don't all interpret it the same way or hold up the same circumstances in which they might offer forgiveness. So if I could just be clear in terms of what I mean by the terms unforgiveness and forgiveness.
Sure.
Unforgiveness is the retention of the negative emotions of anger and hatred toward the perpetrator of a harm. If someone hurts us, we're wounded, and we internalize that, and we carry it around with us.
Uh-huh.
Forgiveness, on the other hand...
Well, can I stop you there for a second?
Sure, of course.
When you say we carry it around with us, how does that demonstrate?
In what way?
How do people who are holding on to this anger, who are holding on to this negativity, who are holding on to this bitterness, how do they project either in their demeanor or, and I guess we could take any one of those things or all of them, but what does that person look like physically? When you're around that person, what sort of energy is coming from that person? Do you feel?
Well, it's a lot of negativity. It's a lot of depression. There's a sadness. There's a joylessness. There's ample research on the biology of unforgiveness. It affects your cardiovascular system. It affects your digestive system. It inhibits your sleep, your eating. I mean, it affects our entire way of life. What happens to us quite often is when we do not deal with our emotional wounds, we expect time to heal them, and we know that that doesn't take place. What happens is we create a new emotional baseline, a new norm. that is off kilter. It's a state of joylessness. But after a period of time, someone's going to come up to you and say, "How you doing?" You're going to say, "I'm fine." When in reality, it's been so long since you've been happy, you don't even know what it feels like anymore. So I would say that the symptoms of unforgiveness are quite obvious, and quite often everybody else can see those symptoms, but you're the person
right.
that's carrying it around.
Yeah, it's something, it's called denial.
Yes, it is.
Right, it really is. Yeah, I mean, it's not me, it's everybody else.
Yeah.
And so that's something, and if you want to hold on to it, then our discussion here is aimed at helping you understand what happens to you if you do hold on to it. And so you have done a good deal of research as you help people try to deal with stuff that is unforgivable, but yet you need to, for your own benefit, learn how to forgive. And I guess I'm interested as to how this plays. You know, you think about Cancer Treatment Centers of America, who are in the business, and I say this hopefully in a positive way. Most or many people feel that the organizations like this don't really want to see a cure for cancer because then it's not good for their business. And I wonder how that flies into the face of what you do for the Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Well, here's what I do. As the director of pastoral care, daily I meet with cancer patients. As I listen to our cancer patients, I hear stories about their life and the things that they've experienced. I heard stories so often over the years that were forgiveness-related, emotional wounds that had not healed, hatred that they continued to carry. And so imagine that you're in my office and you're listening to a patient who's just come into the hospital who is overwhelmed with anger and hatred towards someone. The question is, what are you going to do? Are you going to pat them on the back? Are you going to say, "Oh, that's too bad, forget, move on"? Or are you going to take everything that you know about the impact and the consequences of bearing that emotional wound and do what you can do to help save that person? There's not a person in my organization that isn't completely dedicated to effecting healing. So whether or not there's a cure one day or, myths about whether cancer hospitals want to bring healing, it certainly isn't relevant to where I work, and in particular, my particular position of working with patients.
All right. Now, moving forward, because that's the goal of our conversation, teaching people to forgive. In this instance, we're specifically talking about a group of people. There were 19 involved, and all of them look the same. They all pretty much came from the same place. So when we get angry about standing in line at the airport to get onto the plane, or when we are angry and we blame these, you listen to a lot of these talk radio programs and read books and however else the focus is on Islam and how it is a religion of hatred and they want to kill everybody that doesn't believe in their way. I'm sure there are people who belong to that group that feel that way. Now, whether it's all of them, I guess that remains to be seen. But under the circumstances, if you work yourself up into a sweat like a lot of people do, it back to what you're saying here, it creates cancer. We have these cancers in our body. Anyway, everybody's got cancer in your body, but it's how your body deals with it. And if your immune system is weakened by all of these things, the unforgiveness issues that we're talking about, then you're doing it to yourself, pal.
Well, that's often the case. By the way, we do not teach that these wounds create cancer. What we teach is the same thing that the National Institute of Health teaches, and that's this. Psychological stress can and does facilitate the growth and the spread of cancer. And it does that because the stress causes a depletion of cancer-fighting enzymes that can otherwise battle the cancer.
Well, so that's right. The immune system is what I'm talking about in general. You're being nice about it. I'm saying the same thing, but I'm not being so nice.
Well, but a lot of people think that these wounds cause cancer. For example, there was a physician that has colon cancer, and he blames his colon cancer on the fact that his wife spent him into bankruptcy. There's another woman whose husband
was kidnapped. He could blame himself for marrying her in the first place.
Yeah, well, you know, and you know, we have divorced women that are furious at their husbands. But the point is that we're not talking specifically, or we're stating that these emotional traumas cause cancer.
Mm.
And we're certainly not saying that finding forgiveness is going to cure them. But we're saying the same thing that the NIH is saying, is that harboring these negative emotions pound your immune system.
I don't disagree. I'm just drawing a distinction between what you're saying and what your deal is and what I believe. That's all. There's nothing.
Sure.
I just think that it's stronger than that. But that's not the point.
Well, you had mentioned the word anger. In my book, The Forgiveness Project, I draw a delineation between the emotion of anger and hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Anger is the feeling we feel whenever we lose control. I mean, there's not a patient in my hospital that doesn't harbor anger. They don't want to be in Philly, but they want to be back home doing whatever they're doing. Hatred, on the other hand, is when you have strong negative feelings toward a person.
Mm-hmm.
You can be angry at a child, but not hate them.
Right. Yeah.
And so the emotion and forgiveness is really felt more toward feelings of hatred and trying to help those wounds heal so that you no longer feel those feelings of hatred. Now, anger is a very good emotion. We should be angry when we see, you know,
what happens September 11th makes us appropriately angry.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And anger can trigger us into a mode of justice seeking. And I happen to believe in a God that is just as well as merciful.
Mm.
So seeking justice is not antithetical to certainly my religion as a Christian, and I think most.
All right.
So they're two different emotions.
In the moments that we have remaining, the focus is on forgiveness. And you say, and I agree, forgiveness helps us move on. So in 10 years from now, I do not believe we have been as forgiving generally not that we need to be or want to be. It just is. It makes sense if you look at it on a personal level to do this, does it not?
Sure. Imagine a tornado comes into your town, and in your years of media, I'm sure you've seen plenty of, you know, acts of God, as it were, that just destroyed homes.
Yep. And then how do you figure this out? What sense does it make? Yes. Right.
Well, and then all you're left with is a foundation. These emotional cyclones that we experience from time to time leave us the same way. Our lives have been destroyed. Life as we knew it is gone.
Yeah.
It's never going to be the same. For example, if you take an 18-year-old soldier and send him to Afghanistan, that young man isn't coming back the same person. He's going to see things and experience things that he will forever change him.
Mm-hmm.
The question then becomes, in light of the fact that you can't go back there, you're never going to be able to do that, but if you have a good foundation, you can build a good life where you do great things. We think the good foundation to build a good life on is a foundation of forgiveness.
Yep. And therefore, you have credibility and you have our attention. The website you might want to releasenow.org. You might want to go to releasenow.org and check out what Dr. Barry has said, what his theory is, how it helps you, because you do. We think about it with regard to our parents or others, families who don't speak to each other for years. I never have gotten that. Forgiveness, though, check it out, releasenow.org. Dr. Barry, thank you for the work that you're doing and helping us understand how we can rebuild one person at a time our country to a better place. It's 21 after the hour on the Good Day program.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity quality and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
This is not a drill.
Repeat,
this is not a drill.
Gun sales are on a staggering pace.
Gun prices are going through the roof, and that means desperate, vicious criminals now want your guns
and will do anything to get them.
Now, a new book reveals powerful secrets for hiding your guns from thieves and looters. You'll learn step-by-step, battle-hardened techniques, where to hide your guns so criminals will never find them,
how to create the perfect hiding place,
as well as the places you should never hide your guns
under any circumstance.
These and other closely guarded gun-caching secrets are guaranteed to keep your weapons safe and out of sight when the going gets tough.
But listen up.
For security reasons, the Hide Your Guns book and even the website may disappear without warning at any time. Go to hideyourguns.com.
That's hideyourguns.com.
Or call 877-327-0365.
Before they come for your guns.
Hideyourguns.com right now. Right now.
Now 23 after the hour on the Doug Steffen Good Day program, the special overview of what the last 10 years since September 11, 2001 have been like and how do we move all of this forward. Aman Ali is an award-winning writer. He's a stand-up comedian. He's a storyteller. Lives in New York. He's one of the only young American Muslim voices in the spotlight today. He has an interesting style of storytelling. He was brought up. I'm not going to tell you his story. I'm going to let you hear him tell his story. May I call you Aman, or shall I call you Mr. Ali, or shall I call you Fred? What do I call you?
Oh, go ahead and call me Aman. Thanks for having me, though.
Yeah. What's your story? And where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up? What are you? What's the best thing about your life?
Well, ethnically, I'm Indian, but I was born and raised in Ohio. Grew up in a small town called Reynoldsburg.
It is. I went to school in Tiffin.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yep.
Wittenberg or?
No, Heidelberg.
Oh, Heidelberg. That's right.
Wittenberg's a little south.
That's right. And then I live in New York City now, stand-up comic, for 4 or 5 years. And my upbringing, I grew up in a predominantly white town, so naturally, being one of the only minorities in school, I was, pretty much the show-and-tell project, a walking show-and-tell project, so it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Uh-huh. What sort of challenges did it present to you? Were you rugged enough to, I'm sure a few of the boys wanted to have a little fun with you, and you became the target of things just because that seems to be the way it is.
Oh, I don't know if it was necessarily the target. It was just lots of questions.
How do you feel about September 11th, Aman?
Exactly.
How old were you when it happened, actually?
I'm
to
sorry?
Set the scene. How old were you on September 11th?
I was 16 years old in high school at the time, and so I did get a lot of questions. People knew that I was Muslim beforehand, and so they didn't really know much about Islam, though. So when they watched the television and saw, these attacks happen, they're like, hey, Aman, those guys are claiming that they're Muslim. Is that what you guys believe? And so, I got a lot of those questions, and I was never necessarily offended by it because, I could be the only Muslim that these people might ever come across in their entire lives. And so I understood, if they just had some genuine, questions, and I was like, all right, that's fine. I've got no problem with
it. All right, so then we won't have, let's keep this serious to a certain, serious, let's keep it on a sort of smart, intelligent level
sure.
plane. The people who say they've read the Quran or a translation of it and that it is hateful and that the religion is all about the death to the infidels and things like that, how do you respond to that? What were you taught as a kid in whatever, we called it Sunday school, I don't know, you call it Saturdays, what do you call it when you... go to classes.
I guess you could call it Sunday school. But
I'm being facetious, obviously, to a certain extent. Yeah.
I want to preface the question. I am a Muslim. I'm Muslim for the past 26 years of my life, born and raised. And I go to the mosque and have an education in that sense. But and the reason I bring that up is it would be, like an average church-going Christian asking them about a particular verse in the Bible.
Yeah, I know a little about the Bible as somebody who went to Sunday school, but I'm not an expert. So why should we expect you to be an expert?
Exactly. But anywho, I'm glad to answer the question. So the Quran...
you can tell me not. You don't have to answer the question if you don't want to.
No, I can gladly answer the question. I've got no problem with it. So there's a verse in the Quran, chapter 5, verse, I want to say either 23 or 32. I'm being a little dyslexic here. I can't remember. But there's a verse where God says, if you kill... one person, an innocent person, it was the sin is as if you killed entire humanity. And if you save one person's life, it's the equivalent of saving the entire humanity.
So why don't we know that, do you suppose? Why don't more people bring that sort of thing to the surface when some of these really stupid questions come up? Or stupid thoughts, if you will. Ignorant thoughts.
Because it's not as sexy to talk about. And the other verse is where people are like, well, look at this violence. Well, look where it says this and look where it says that. The context of when Islam is revealed in history, at the time there were battles happening. And so a lot of these verses were addressing these specific contexts. And if you look at some of Prophet Muhammad, one of the prophets that we hold up highly in our religion, at the time of battle, he instructed people that war is only meant as a defensive. And he said, the moment the person you're fighting wants to stop, you have to stop. And he said that you do not attack women. Do not attack children.
So where did all this stuff come from then? All this misinterpretation, all of this. Where do you suppose that? Have you ever talked about that with your friends, family who also are Muslims?
Absolutely. And a lot of it comes from, people want to interpret things the way they interpret it. And when I saw these quote-unquote so-called, Islamophobic experts on television, non-Muslim guys interpreting the Quran, I'm like, really? I didn't learn that growing up at all. I didn't know anything about, 72 virgins or, where. I didn't know any of that. I'm not even trying to be, silly or sweep under the rug. I didn't learn any of that. I'm like, dude, I've... went to mosques all the time and went to Sunday school. We never learned any of that stuff. I'm sorry.
So you've been Americanized then. You've been Westernized.
I guess you could say that.
Well, I find all of this, frankly, amazing. When you think about September 11th, what do you think? We have about 30 seconds here.
For me, it was an opportunity for dialogue. And yes, it's unfortunate that those were the circumstances, but it forced me to not only talk about who I am, but made me internalize, what is my identity? Who am I, and what do I believe?
Yeah, that's a good question for all of us. No matter what our background is. Aman Ali, thank you for sharing your experiences and your thoughts. That's what this is all about. Good day. Time is half past the hour.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Energy, energy, and more energy.
We all need it. Get the energy you need quick through the powers of wild forest extracts. Wild chaga and birch bark are the secrets of the forest, used exclusively by Russian athletes. Wild chaga is the world's top source of superoxide dismutase, the critical enzyme that blocks the aging process. Chaga is good for your heart and even helps support healthy arteries. Wild birch extract is the top source of betulin, a natural sterol needed by every cell of the body. And healthy cells mean a healthy body and a more powerful you. No wonder it's known as a king of all herbs. Experience real energy and power like you've never dreamed possible. Take Chago Charge Tea with Wild Birch Bark every day and Chagamax capsules to get the energy you need.
You deserve it.
Order today by calling 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
From the shattered Rust Belt come the Lost Vegas.
A brother, one with me. No woman be here. I just came to watch my LEDs.
Life Before the Collapse, vinyl LP by the Las Vegas. Life Before the Collapse by the Las Vegas on 180-gram vinyl and mastered especially for vinyl by legendary audio engineer Steve Hall. Why don't want me to live? Life Before the Collapse by the Las Vegas.
The Las Vegas.
Now available at Amazon.com.
Take the first step in home security. Install the Door Sentinel. Standard locks, deadbolts, and security systems can't prevent forced entry. The Door Sentinel provides door kick-in protection and can be added to your existing security system. The Door Sentinel is easy to install and will turn your home into a fortress. Make the call. 678-648-6757. That's 678-648-6757. Or visit them at S-E-N-T-I-N-E-L securitygroup.com. SentinelSecurityGroup.com.
Democrats, Republicans, have you had enough? Want real change? Then change yourself. Join a new political party formed to liberate the American people from the banksters who have overthrown the Republic. If you agree with maximum liberty, limited government, and traditional morality, then you agree with American Third Position. Get more information now. Call 800-513-4928 or go to a3p.me. That's A, the number 3, p.me. It's time to take America back.
We are now at 33 minutes after the hour of the Doug Steffen Good Day program. Our week-long tribute, lots of conversation about how strong we have become in many areas and whether that strength continues, at least when it comes to our own identity, moving beyond the event itself into a different place. All different facets have been our focus. David Crum is the editor of Read the Spirit. Read the Spirit is an online magazine which covers religion and spirituality and pop culture. Read the Spirit recommends books and films and websites and other media that focus obviously on spirituality and values and diversity. I happen to like what comes out of Read the Spirit myself. David is somebody who's been involved in writing professionally for a couple of decades. He's the religion writer for the Detroit Free Press. And so it is with a focus on David's online publication that we begin our conversation. I find you and your positions on things fascinating. I'm going to call you David instead of Mr. Crum because I'm figuring I'm older than you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you and with your listeners. And, yes, certainly I call myself David on the website, too. So David it is.
Okay. So we had a gentleman on the program who was, I think, 26 years old, Richie, 27
yes,
years old,
26.
So, who is a Muslim, grew up in America, in Ohio, Reynoldsburg, Ohio, bills himself as a comedian. I don't know that there are too many Muslims who are comedians in our country, but I wasn't interested in his humor. I was more interested in him and what he is all about. And one of the things that he pointed out was something that I've heard a lot. You can have an open mind to things or not. That's up to you. But those with an open mind do question some. I mean, we are here to question. I think we question everything. I'm one of these people. It's how I made my living. When I was a kid, I used to ask everybody what, why, how, who, and I still do that, and I manage to make a living doing it. And so when somebody says something like the Quran says, and I look at that person and I think to myself, how the hell does that guy know what the Quran says? He doesn't probably even know what the Bible says or what the Constitution says or maybe what the front page of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette says today. So why would I give him any more credence than anybody else? But yet we do. We are, many people in this country, whenever they hear anything negative about the Muslim faith, yeah, those guys, they're murderers, they're cutthroats. And, I mean, you could say the same thing about Christians. You can say the same thing about Jews. You can say, I don't know, you can say it about Buddhists, but you can say it about the three biggest organized religions. So I wonder, from your perspective, and whether or not you cover this sort of thing in Read the Spirit, and generally it doesn't have to come from Read the Spirit, just what your thoughts are when it comes to those sorts of things that appear in print or in the media in general.
Well, that is something that I've covered extensively over the past 20, 30 years. I'm one of the leading religion news writers nationally who covers that specific area of how we create a better, diverse community in America. I mean, if you're tuning into this radio broadcast, you're tuning in because you get that you want to hear various points of view. You want to hear something positive in your day. You know, the biggest challenge in your day is why should you crawl out of bed in the morning? How are you going to make it through another stressful day? And those are fundamental spiritual questions. Now, you know, at the moment, we've got a lot of problems in our world, so we want to blame somebody. And it's convenient to blame Muslims because there's only, you know, 1% of Americans, 1 in 100 Americans are Muslim. It's interesting that the latest major terrorist tragedy in the world involved a guy in Norway who claimed to be a devout Christian.
Yeah.
But I don't focus a lot on that kind of name-calling and debating in the work we do in our online magazine. And interestingly enough, the Pew Foundation just did a major, major study, polled about 6 different ways in the United States and in other countries, and just prior to 9/11 here put out a report saying that they found no sign of emerging extremism in America's Muslim community. Now, of course, that's just one study and we can debate it, but I don't think that's the biggest issue we face on the 10th anniversary.
What is?
Well, I think finding ways to move forward. a lot of people at this time want to remember what happened 10 years ago, and I think that's very appropriate. I had a friend who died in the Twin Towers, a journalist friend. It's heartbreaking to recall. And then if you think of all the Americans who served in our military since that time and all the returning GIs, we're hearing on our website from many GIs who've returned and have long-term injuries as a result of all the events that happened in this decade. So there's a great deal to honor, a great deal to feel sad about. But a lot of what we're focused on is trying to get people to think ahead, to think where we want to go now with what we've experienced and what we know and what we've learned as Americans.
Okay. So I'm going to follow the exercise at readthespirit.com. David Crum is the editor of Read the Spirit. This is an online magazine asking, in a sense, and I'm going to, Richie and Jennifer, I would like you this could be a prayer. It could be a statement that you make as a general overview of how you begin your day once in a while. When you think about these things, when you think about how words are as powerful as they are, we talk about that all the time. I was just engaged in a conversation with somebody who's very dear to me, and I put something on the flat screen that was misinterpreted, which happens very frequently because there is no emotion whatsoever attached to the flat screen. And yet we are more and more depending on this miserable flat screen to communicate sometimes our deepest emotions, our strongest feelings, our concerns, whatever. And because there is no emotion in a flat screen, how do you really get to the essence of what someone is thinking and or feeling? So I'm going to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to either think this to him or herself. You're in a car, maybe you're home or at work, wherever you are. Here's what David Crum asks us to start in thinking about this or many other things. I hope for a world where. You finish the sentence. Richie, I hope for a world where.
Where my children get to grow up in a happy, healthy, and friendly place.
Jennifer, you hope for a world where?
We can eliminate fear.
David, how do you finish that?
You know, it's so fascinating to have your team answer in those two ways because we've been collecting these now for more than a week. We're working with a number of authors nationwide on this project. There's an author that some of your listeners may know, John Philip Newell out of Scotland, very popular best-selling author on inspirational matters, and he helped us to devise this. The number one and number two responses that we're getting nationwide are children, thoughts of our children, a better world for our children, and freedom of fear. And it's fascinating that your team there came up with those two. Just
well, we're so surrounded by fear, and we're in a media, the electronic media, which includes this sort of conversational entertainment. It includes the so-called news media, which is basically in business to scare the pants off of all this. That's all they want to do. That's all that it has matriculated. And I don't say matured. That's not a word I would use. If anything, gone backwards to a period when we didn't really understand what was going on. There were a lot of people didn't have a lot of information. Now we don't get any information. We get lots of pejorative conversation, a lot of BS, a lot of garbage that comes from people who are trying to get you to listen or watch so they can sell advertising and make money. That's all that is. It's all the opinions and the so-called news media. The storms are always worse, according to the news media, than they really are. The problems in traffic are always worse in the reporting than they actually are. If you experience driving on the highway, you can go through all of their miserable existence. And I sounded pretty negative about this because I am damn tired of it, frankly, having to be around people who are scared all the time of basically nothing. I mean, there are reasons and good reasons for us to have our guard up, to be cautious, to be concerned. If you walk down the path in the woods at night and you come to a black bear, you better turn around and run fast. And that's a reality. But the other, most of this other stuff that we hear and see about is just aimed at screwing up our heads. That's my, I'm off on a toot and I need to stop. So, David.
I think you're absolutely correct. In fact, we're 3 years into Read the Spirit, and last year, to kind of test our hypothesis, we did a thing called the American Journey, where in 40 days, my son and I, who's a young adult journalist, he and I circled America 10,000 miles in 40 days. We filed 60 stories from the road through the Gannett newspapers. And over and over and over again, the questions that came back to us, I said them a minute ago, why should I get out of bed in the morning? How do I make it through a day? And the kind of thing you're doing with the radio show here, or the kind of thing we're doing in Read the Spirit, this is important stuff. I mean, this is the stuff that people, millions and millions of Americans are out there saying, give me something, you know, give me some hope. And so that's why we put this phrase up on the website, I hope for a world where. And it's so fascinating to just watch the emails come in.
I'm looking at some of them. I hope for a world where children grow up feeling safe. That's pretty much what Rich said. Children are loved by not only their own family, but by families around the world.
Yeah.
I hope for a world where we celebrate our differences as well as our similarities.
Well, let me give you an example. This is close to home. We're based in Michigan, our home office. Mm-hmm. In downtown Detroit, Focus Hope, which is an internationally known community justice organization, is going to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of teenagers from all kinds of backgrounds coming to do a volunteer day on 9/11. On the street, they're going to have these big easels up with this phrase at the top of it, and they're going to ask these teenagers to complete the sentence. And we're going to be publishing a lot more of these. And actually, if your listeners want to come to the website and send us a line, we would welcome that. But it really catches, it just turns your head around and focuses our eyes, I think, in a much more positive direction.
Mm-hmm. We, as we look at this, I'm thinking about diversity. The town where I grew up, which is the town where I live now, it was very diverse. I didn't know it, didn't understand it. Yeah, what do I know? I think every town is supposed to be like the town I grew up in. That's what most people think, right? America or our world is, as we experience it as a child, our environment creates who we are, what we're exposed to for ideas or from people, experiences, even the topography. Okay, isn't every town supposed to have snow in the winter? You know, stuff like that. That, you know, when we get out in the big bad world, we find every town doesn't have snow. Thank heavens for that. And when I found places that didn't have snow, that's where I went in the wintertime. But it took me a while to figure that out. It's the same thing here. We have this really, we have this enclosed look. we, as the perhaps most developed, well, we think we are, in many ways we are the most developed country in the world, there are fewer people, percentage-wise, in any other way you measure it, who have passports in our country. So how do we know what the rest of the world is like unless we go experience the rest of the world? And I would wish that for people as part of this experiment, because it is not what we experience here is not like anything else anywhere. You may feel comfortable in Europe, Western Europe especially, or you may feel comfortable in Australia or Scandinavia, but it is not the same, and it's not as dramatically different. But there are many places in this world, and you see them if you've traveled the Middle East or Africa or you've gone to Asia, that are so dramatically different from how we live. And that's one of the challenges, don't you think, David, to have people all understand?
Absolutely.
And then we don't have this kind of stuff going on with this. So much hatred.
Absolutely. I was in Bangladesh, which is one of the world's most impoverished country, 2 years ago, and I spent a day interviewing families who were living in homes that were made of 4-foot by 8-foot sheets of corrugated aluminum.
Yep.
This is about as deep in poverty as you can possibly get. And I remember visiting a mother and a father and their daughter in one of these little homes, and the first thing they did is made tea to welcome me as a visitor. And I said, "What is it you're hoping for?" And they said, "We want our daughter to go to college." They're living in a metal box.
Yep.
And their hope is, "We want our daughter to go to college." And what was the second thing they said? They said, "We've had so many cycles of violence in Bangladesh. We want that to end."
Yeah.
And if you think about it, that's exactly what we talked about as we began talking. We're thinking of our children, and we want freedom from fear.
We've come around full spirit. ReadTheSpirit.com. David Crum, thank you for sharing your thoughts and your hopes with us.
Thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome. As we think about how to be stronger than we are now and hope in the next 10 years we are in a much better place than we were 10 years ago. I think we may be in some respects now, but we got a long way to go. 49 past the hour on Good Day.
This is Troy Aikman.
And Hulk Hogan with another worry-free shopping tip.
You know, getting the brands you want doesn't have to mean worrying about a big credit card bill.
Man, I hate worrying. Gives me the hives.
Yeah. Anyways, at Rent-A-Center, you don't even need a credit card. And if you ever need to bring it back and stop paying, well, you can. So you never have to worry.
Hey, the hives are going away, brother.
Right now at Rent-A-Center, rent-to-own 60-inch LG plasmas for a special price, worry-free. See rentacenter.com for complete details and more information on the worry-free guarantee.
Protection against web-based threats like malware and phishing has become a serious challenge for companies with distributed workforces. Barracuda Networks, the world leader in content security, application delivery, and data protection with more than 130,000 customers worldwide, can help. Web Security Flex combines physical and virtual gateways with cloud services to protect both on-site and remote users from a single portal. Stop web threats. Visit Barracuda.com/Flex to try Barracuda Web Security Flex free for 30 days. That's Barracuda.com/Flex.
Amy McCready, founder and editor of PositiveParentingSolutions.com and author of If I Have to Tell You One More Time, offers advice on how to stay connected with kids, all while trying to keep up with busy schedules.
As a busy mom, I found the Droid 3 by Motorola has everything I need to stay connected and on top of everyone's schedules, whether I'm at home, at work, or shuttling kids from one activity to the next.
Amy says that having a face-to-face conversation with your kids goes a long way in effective communications, but know that, unfortunately, it's not always possible while traveling for work.
One of the great things about the Droid 3 by Motorola is that after a busy day of conference calls and meetings, I can use my Droid 3 to video chat with my kids.
Droid 3 by Motorola delivers what you need to get through your busy schedules. No matter where your day takes you, work, home, or somewhere in between, the Droid 3 by Motorola gives you what you need to be productive and stay in touch. Visit Motorola.com for more information.
Hi, everybody. Jason Lewis here. Once again, for my friends at Midas Resources, these are hard times for investors. You don't know which way to go. Is the market going to recover? Is the Washington spending machine going to continue? And that means a lot of debt and maybe printing money to cover the debt. They call it monetizing the debt, but that's a fancy way of saying inflation. And a lot of people are worried about that. So you need the ultimate inflation hedge, and that's gold. Now, let me be clear about this. Commodities fluctuate in price. They can go up and down. Very volatile. There's no guarantee. But if you want the ultimate inflation hedge, you need to talk to my friends at Midas Resources. The number, 1-800-686-2237. If you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to have it in your possession, call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237. It's Midas Resources, 1-800-686-2237 for gold. And tell them Jason sent you.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
Now, 53 past the hour on the Good Day program, Warren Eckstein, who is someone we love to love, and we are, I guess we are animals, though, aren't we? We're all animals, mammals, and we are, as the human race, considered animals, are we not, Warren?
Absolutely, all of us.
All right, and some of us act more like animals than animals. However, that is not the focus. I have to keep chuckling about my voice here, which I've apologized for. The essence of our look ahead, thinking about some of the dogs that were very important back 10 years ago. There are some great stories that you have of pets. And I'm wondering, as we think about some of the pets that helped in all of the various rescue operations, what have we learned about what some of these dogs can do? And how has that helped to change either the kinds of dogs that are used for rescue stuff or the training or both, Warren?
You know, it's a great question, Doug. You know, years ago, I had done this type of training, search and rescue training, when I was stationed in Europe. So right after the attacks of 9/11, I was actually called in by the Petco Foundation, which is a charitable foundation of the Petco Corporation. And because of my background, they had no one else available. They asked me to go to 9/11 and work with the New York City Police Canine Unit to see what, in fact, their needs were and being able to donate money on their behalf, which is exactly what we did. But one of the things that we found at 9/11, which was different, most of the search and rescue dogs in the United States at that point were specifically trained to look for people and find people that might have been injured or alive. What they found at Ground Zero was that these dogs were getting very, very frustrated because they weren't finding any survivors. So as part of the immediate training that had to be done while the dogs were actually searching at Ground Zero was letting some of the police officers and volunteers actually hide under the rubble so the dogs would have the opportunity of finding someone that was alive and therefore knowing that they did their job. And a lot of these dogs at that point were not trained as cadaver dogs or dogs sniffing out bodies. So there's been a tremendous increase, it's hard to say, but there's been a tremendous increase in that advanced type of training, teaching dogs to sniff out cadavers. But the dogs did an amazing job. Let me just give you one story. When I arrived on the scene, the first dog I met was a German Shepherd working with one of the police officers. And I saw that his feet were bandaged up. So my first question was obviously, hey, why are his feet bandaged up? And so we were the first dogs on the scene here. And when we got here, there was a lot of rubble, obviously, and the dog cut his feet. We took him to the triage center. We had the feet all taken care of. I took the dog home that night, went to leave for work the next morning to come back to 9/11, and the dog refused to let me leave the house without going there. So he had to take the dog with him. Somehow, Doug, the dog knew what was going on. This was something he had to do and had to go back there and just work. And these dogs were tireless. It's kind of interesting because on my website in a couple of weeks, I have some producers right now that are going to be interviewing a lot of the dogs that searched there. But even more important, I'm going to be interviewing the head veterinarian at the University of Pennsylvania. Well, you know, it's going to be on my website, but we'll shoot it over to you, so I'm sure you guys will put it up too. And the bottom line is that we're going to find out exactly the effect that this had on the dogs years and years later. So now they're in development of trying to figure out, can we put some type of mask on the dog where they can still be able to use their nose, but somehow not ingest or inhale some of the toxins that they did? Because many of the dogs did die from cancer. No one's proven that it's specifically caused by that. But let me tell you, having been there, when I left, and there was no plane, so I had to drive back to Los Angeles, I was coughing and hacking and spitting for 3 or 4 days. So those are some of the things that are being done right now. But the dogs, Doug, an amazing job. They're a spectacular job. And more people are getting involved in search and rescue, which is a really good thing.
How do we keep from exploiting the dogs or having the dogs exploited when it comes to their training?
Well, what you need to do is you need to get involved. There are, you know, there are certain trainers out there. I'll train your dog for search and rescue. There are groups out there. If someone's really, really serious about getting involved with working with their dog and training their dog for search and rescue, they need to get in touch with a volunteer group. The search and rescue company, SARS, is one of them, and really get involved and educate themselves to find out what's involved, because it is a major commitment and does take an awful lot of training. These dogs are not just, you know, heel sit, stay down, and come. They know exactly what they're doing. And one thing I learned many years ago when I was overseas and I was watching the people work at 9/11 too, is when in doubt, don't trust your instincts, trust the dog's instincts.
Wow. There's something to remember if you don't take anything else away this conversation.
I don't want to go into specifics because I can't, but specifically in my lifetime, I can guarantee at least two specific times where had I used my judgment, I wouldn't be talking to you today had I not trusted the dog's instinct.
Yeah. What a wonderful lesson to learn from that reality. Warren Eckstein from The Pet Show. Check it out. You can see his picture in the contributors box at DougStefan.com. Bring you to all the things that he was talking about. He's going to bring to you regarding these dogs. Thank you, Warren.